For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation, to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. Shalom, and welcome to the Everlasting Nation Broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions in Hickson, Tennessee. Now here's your host, IBJM Ministries Director, John Lawrence.
Greetings, this is John Lawrence, and I'm your host for the program today. We're delighted to have you with us. My guest once again is Brother Alan Lord, Director of Global Outreach here at IBJM. And Alan, of course, has just been on a mission trip to France and Israel, and we've talked the last time about Israel, and there's so much to say about that, Brother Alan, that we wanted to talk some more about it. I know that your wife, Hagit, is from Israel, and she is a Jewish believer. Her family lives there. How common is it today to find saved Jewish people in Israel, and what is it like for them there?
I can only really speak for my wife in her particular situation, her family. Hagit probably has an extended family of close to 500 people, from cousins.
Wow.
And nieces and nephews and all day, and from different countries. I'm talking about from modern day Iraq, Babylonian Jews, Iran, Morocco, Tunisia, French speaking Jews. Some live in Paris, some live in Los Angeles. They're all over. And John, she is the only one in her family that knows the Lord. It's very difficult to witness. However, there's a great need, John. We were able to visit one of our friends, a young lady that's the sister of a young man that I met in Ukraine years ago. She's in a church in Arad. There's so much persecution.
That's in the south of Israel.
It's in the south, down close to Beersheba. And there's so much persecution from religious Jews on the Christian community that they have actually been an influence on this church. Anna's church losing the lease on their property, and they're now having to meet as a Christian church in a park, which is outside of the city. There's so much influence, they close the city down in the evening. They block the street entrance at 10 o'clock in the evening. You can't go in or out of there. And that's not the only town. Even up north, the Jews are doing that as well. They're taking over. They're the religious. So there's a big war against that. And so persecution among Christian churches is pretty heavy right now. We've had people that have...
And these would be Jewish believers that they're trying to persecute.
Exactly. Even to the point in Anna's case where they put a picture of her on the door of her apartment building, almost like a wanted picture, and said, "This woman is a missionary, and stay away from her and her family." So her family is actually persecuted. So there's so much of that going on, John. But I don't want that to deter, and don't want to sound like that makes it impossible for us to do work in Israel. I was able to go in, John, to different shops and went in different malls, and young people, Jewish young people, that I was able to give tracts to, and they accepted those tracts in Hebrew. And I didn't have but one person refuse a tract during my whole 3-week stay in Israel. So the door is wide open for Jewish evangelism there. Although the secular Jew, I'm talking about the religious Jews, are persecuting, there is a opening among the Jewish young people that I talk to. So I'm just praying and asking God to, hey, send us some workers, send us some people that'll go to that country to share the gospel with God's chosen people there in that country.
And what about young people? Did you have any experience with sharing the gospel with some of the young people?
I can just tell you one, and it's Hagit's nephew. I prayed and asked God and her family, God, give me at least one opening, someone that will ask me out of her family to talk with me. And this young man, the day before we left, came, said, "What do you do? What do you actually do in life?" And I told him I was a Bible teacher. And that worked into a witness into what do I teach, which Bible do I teach from. And through looking at the scripture in Isaiah 53, in him in Hebrew, me in English, I was able to show him how Christ is the suffering servant. Now, he didn't accept the Lord, but he had seed planted in his heart. And so pray for this young man. I won't name his name on the radio, but you pray for him, the nephew of Hagit.
Let's pray for him, and thank you, Alan, for joining us today. And let's also pray for workers for Israel. Let's tune in now to our Bible study for today with Jewish believer Brother Mark Oshman.
Welcome back to our radio program. With this session, we begin a study of the New Testament books. Over the next few sessions, our survey will examine the era during which the New Testament books appeared. The chronology of the New Testament covered a period extending over several decades. It contained four historical books, the four Gospels, and the historical book of Acts. It also included 21 epistles, that is, letters addressed to churches and to individuals. The New Testament concluded with one prophetic book, the book of Revelation. New Testament authors possessed a wide variety of backgrounds. Some of them, such as Peter, James, and John, earned their livelihoods as fishermen. Matthew collected taxes for the Romans. Luke had medical training. Paul received an extensive education in Judaism. James and Jude were half-brothers to Jesus Christ, being children of Mary. Apart from Paul, Peter, Luke, and John, no individual penned more than a single New Testament book. Paul authored most of the epistles, including possibly the book of Hebrews. Matthew and John were eyewitnesses to many of the events that they described in their Gospels. Mark might have received his information from Peter, who served as a primary source of information about Jesus Christ. Luke compiled his Gospel using a number of different sources. The primary events contained in the New Testament historical sections took place in Israel and the surrounding areas. However, a significant portion of the book of Acts occurred in Asia Minor and in Europe. Understanding the rise and growth of the Christian faith involved comprehending the political, social, and economic settings in Israel underlying the New Testament narratives. Greco-Roman cultural norms, for instance, became associated with and promoted by the ruling class in Israel. Such individuals held sway over influential segments of the wealthier parts of the Jewish population. In Israel, values such as those came into conflict with Jewish beliefs and traditions. In the 4th century BC, Alexander the Great conquered the entire Mediterranean world. After his death, four of his generals appropriated various sections of Alexander's domains. Two of these generals were named Antiochus and Ptolemy. Antiochus occupied that area known as Syria. Ptolemy reigned over that country known as Egypt. For hundreds of years, Antiochus and Ptolemy and their descendants waged war. The land of Israel was located between those two powers and often served as a battleground for the opposing forces. During the New Testament era, though, Rome controlled the Middle East. The Roman Empire tried to accomplish four primary goals. The rulers wanted to unify the Mediterranean world, enable safe and easy communication over the expanse of their empire, use Latin as a universal language, and maintain and spread the Roman peace, known as the Pax Romana. The emperor exercised sovereignty as the supreme authority in the Roman Empire. He often appointed governors or procurators to administer the affairs of substantial portions of his domains. The birth of Jesus Christ occurred during the reign of the emperor Caesar Augustus, who ruled from B.C. 30 unto A.D. 14. Augustus was the grandnephew and adopted heir of Julius Caesar. Like Alexander the Great, Augustus was a military-minded conqueror, able to unite large amounts of political entities while pacifying strife throughout his dominions. He became the first Roman ruler to adopt the title of emperor, after defeating the forces of Mark Antony in a Roman civil war. In the second chapter of Luke, the author described how Augustus Caesar's tax, or tribute, brought Joseph and Mary back to Bethlehem, in fulfillment of the prophecy in the 5th chapter of Micah. The crucifixion of Jesus Christ took place during the time when Tiberius, the adopted son and successor of Augustus, reigned as Caesar. The image of Tiberius might have decorated the coin that Jesus Christ held when he asked his adversaries, quote, "Whose is this image and superscription?" Unquote. Claudius, the nephew of Tiberius, ruled in Rome in the early days of Christianity. The book of Acts records that he expelled the Jews from Rome. The empire experienced a great famine during the administration of Claudius. When Paul said, quote, "I appeal to Caesar," unquote, he referred specifically to Nero. Nero was a degenerate ruler who, among his other crimes, had his own mother put to death. He actively persecuted Christians, blaming them for the great fire that swept Rome in AD 64. Nero exercised sovereignty over the Roman Empire when Peter instructed Christians in his first epistle, when Peter instructed Christians to, quote, "honor the king," unquote. Nevertheless, Christians did struggle with the compulsory loyalty statement of Rome, namely, acknowledging that Caesar was Lord. While not wanting to appear disloyal to Rome, believers refused to ascribe the title Lord to anyone but Jesus Christ. This caused some Romans to perceive Christians as enemies of their country. Kings held the position of the most powerful territorial rulers of the Roman Empire. However, many of them served as client monarchs, subject to the pleasure of the central authority at Rome. In theory, the Roman Senate selected vassal kings. Many of these functionaries, such as Herod the Great, actually gained their positions through their connection with the reigning Roman emperor at that time. During the New Testament era, the Herodian rulers governed portions of Israel. That dynasty began with Herod the Great in B.C. 37. It ended with the death of Herod Agrippa II in A.D. 70. The Herodian line descended from a noble family of Edomites who had converted to Judaism in the previous century. As mentioned above, Herod the Great became the most notorious of the Roman vassal kings. Appointed by Augustus Caesar as the king of Judea, Herod the Great governed the Jewish people on behalf of Rome. Among his most infamous deeds was ordering the death of all children in the vicinity of Bethlehem who were younger than 2 years of age. This event was recorded in the second chapter of Matthew's Gospel. Herod Agrippa, a grandson of Herod the Great, reigned over Judea and Samaria. He owed his throne to the close fellowship and relationships he had with the emperors Caligula and Claudius. Herod Agrippa had James killed and wanted to execute Peter as well. After his subjects acclaimed him as a god, though, Herod Agrippa, in the words of Acts, quote, "was eaten of worms and gave up the ghost," unquote. Eventually, Rome chose to address their puppet rulers as, quote, "tetrarchs," unquote, rather than as, quote, "kings," unquote. They didn't want to overstate the limited authority of those local leaders. Tetrarchs, unlike kings, exercised sovereignty over limited portions of territory. When a monarch left several surviving heirs, the Roman emperor sometimes divided the late ruler's territory among them. For example, when Herod the Great died, Augustus divided Herod's dominions about his three surviving sons. The oldest of the heirs, Archelaus, was given Judea and Samaria. After several years, though, Augustus replaced Archelaus with a Roman governor. Herod Antipas, a son of Herod the Great, was appointed as tetrarch over Galilee and Perea. He was the Herod who had John the Baptist beheaded. But not long after the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, Herod Antipas offended the emperor Caligula, who both deposed and exiled him. Yet another of Herod's surviving sons, Herod Philip, was the man whom Herod Antipas had taken his wife away from. With this, we conclude the first segment of our study about the times of the New Testament. Thank you very much for listening. We invite you to come back for future programs about the New Testament times and the books of the New Testament.
You've been listening to the Everlasting Nation broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions. For more information, you can write us at P.O. Box 1386, Hickson, Tennessee, 37343, or call us at 423-876-8150. Or you may also go online at ibjm.org. Until next time, may God bless and shalom.